Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and my next guest is a true minority. John Amici is the only British national to have played in the NBA. Oh, and then there's the small matter of his being the first man who played in the NBA to reveal that he is gay. He's written a memoir about his life and basketball career entitled Man in the Middle. It's just been published by ESPN Books. John Amici, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian.
Let me start with the question that I guess is obvious. Why didn't you come out when you were playing basketball?
Yeah, that's a question I get a lot. It's not really a sport issue. It's really a workplace issue. I look at my environment, I don't think it is the job of the employee to make the environment around me accepting and embracing of diversity. I think it's the other way around.
So you think the environment was hostile. In fact, you write that homosexuality is an obsession among ball players, trailing only wealth and women. Obsession?
Well, yes, I think I have constantly been surprised by the amount that straight people love to talk about gay things, usually in the negative, but nonetheless, it comes up an awful lot. And frankly, have you ever seen a bunch of straight people at a bar after being drunk?
They make gay jokes against each other.
Yes.
So you write that your teammates, quote, most were convinced, even as they sat next to me on the plane or threw me the ball in the post, that they had never met a gay person. I mean, these are, urban professionals. What world are they living in?
The same world as everybody else. I think people tend to put the rose-tinted glasses on when they start talking about the issue of homosexuality as if we're totally accepting because Will and Grace is on TV and people like it. This is not the case. We're in a situation in a society now where people think it's acceptable to have straight people as long as they're coiffing their hair. They don't mind gay people, as long as they are, taking their cups before they land at the airport. But there are certain jobs where people just don't imagine, don't believe, don't want to even imagine or look and see that gay people exist and work.
Do you think there's a thin line between homophobia and homoerotic?
I tend to see that the people, I think now we could probably call it the Ted Haggard example.
Yes.
I think a lot of people who object so vehemently to the idea of homosexuality have issues that are unresolved themselves.
Though, he says he went into counseling for 3 weeks and now he's cured.
I've got news for you. I'm a psychologist and I don't know of any psychological issue or disorder that can be solved in 3 weeks.
Even if it is a disorder.
He's defining it by a different set of criteria than the American Psychological Association. I'm just saying there are disorders of the mind, and I don't know of any of them that can be solved in 3 weeks.
That's an interesting route for a former professional athlete. You're pursuing a PhD in psychology. How'd you come to that?
Oh, I've always been. It was never something that just popped into my mind as a good idea. I have always found it laughable that people talk to me about, what are you going to do after you play basketball? I played basketball and it was a great job. But frankly, there has to be something more meaningful and noble to do for the rest of my life. I don't want to be one of those people that lives off telling the story about that time in 1986 when I made that move against that player. That would be a sad existence for me, I think.
John Amici is the author now of a memoir called Man in the Middle. It's just been published by ESPN Books. He is now officially the first former NBA player to come out as gay. And toward the end of your pro career, you write, you were, quote, hiding but in plain sight. Still, by the end of my second season in Utah, you played for the Utah Jazz, I was practically daring reporters to out me, but it never happened. That's a fascinating passage. How were you daring them?
Well, I think I've had a great many feelings of indignation in my last season in Utah, mostly due to the kind of the non-relationship that I had with the coaching staff. But certainly, I wasn't hiding the fact that I was gay in any way. I didn't pretend. I didn't have mythical girlfriends who I talked about but nobody ever saw. I didn't pay women to spend time with me. My friends, many of whom were gay, spent time in the players' lounge in the with the wives and girlfriends. So it wasn't a massive leap of faith for people.
But did you have boyfriends who you didn't bring around?
No. I don't have a partner, and that's nothing to do with gay or straight. That's just that I'm difficult to live with.
How so?
I am, I'm a person who's pretty introspective, and I recognize that I have flaws as well as positives. But I've lived alone for a long, long time because I, obviously have lived in lots of different countries. And I think it's just made me additionally quirky to what my personality already was. Makes me hard to live with, I think. It would take a very special person, I imagine. I'm hoping I'll find one, but it'll take a very special person.
And I guess someone who could live with a 6'10", 280-pound, is it?
I was 280 pounds a while ago. I don't know where I am now, but it's probably more than that.
On Deadspin.com, the sports blog, one reader wrote in the comments section, Amici's not exactly coming out of the closet here. I mean, the guy wore an ascot to a post-game press conference once. I'm just saying, writes this guy. Is that an example of you daring the press to out you?
I wore a what? An ascot?
An ascot.
I don't think I even know what an ascot is.
It's a kind of tie or kerchief that I guess this writer considers, a gay male indicator.
But, yeah, you know what? That is a stunning and stark example of the kind of ignorance I'm talking about. I mean, you're not gay because you wear a certain type of clothing or cologne. That's not how it works. If there's any lesson to be learned here, it's the fact that gay can be, yes, Jack from Will and Grace, but gay can also be 6'9 and black and 300 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
You just can't tell that way. It's not how it works. I know people would like it to be that easy, but it just isn't.
Were you hoping to some degree that the press would out you?
I think that it's natural to understand that if you were outed, the responsibility is kind of off your shoulders. Somebody else has done it, and you have to respond to that. Whereas when you choose to do it, especially this way, you're kind of putting yourself out there for criticism and all kinds of stuff, and it's totally your decision, totally my decision. So in some ways, it may have at that time felt like it would be easier, but I'm really glad that it's gone this way. I'm really glad that I've been able to put a book out there that condenses and distills most of my thoughts and feelings and philosophies and experiences so that people can look at them.
John Amici, former NBA player on Utah and Orlando, has written Man in the Middle. It's a memoir. He's now the first NBA player, really former NBA player, to come out as gay. And in her column this weekend, the New York Times' Selena Roberts writes that, quote, no current male player in the four major professional sports has dared to come out. So do you think it's easier for women? Martina Navratilova, Cheryl Swoops, at very least, came out during their careers.
Yes, they did, but I think it's worth mentioning that Martina Navratilova lost everything when she did it. It took her three decades to get back what she lost, just in terms of simple earnings. And there's never been an out male athlete who's received an endorsement. So they lose an awful lot. I think Cheryl and Martina, those are the really brave ones. They are very, very brave. But let's face it, your average person, your average, dare I say, straight person, has a very different view on female homosexuality than they do on male. The people who would damn me to hell, would send me hateful emails, are often some of the same people who would put $2 in the G-string of two women who were kissing.
You write that Jerry Sloan, your coach on the Jazz, guessed that you were gay and was less than understanding. He knew?
I believe that he did, yes. I mean, I was told by various sources that about some of the slurs that were used in reference to me in the locker room when I was in the coach's room when I wasn't there. So, yes, I think he knew. And in his first unsanitized comment when he was asked, he said, yes, it would probably make a difference.
How do you think he figured it out when nobody else did?
I've already said, it's not a question of everybody. Lots of people knew. They just hadn't been told.
Right. And what were you getting at a minute ago? He made negative comments about it?
Yes.
What were those? What happened?
All I can say is that I've received comments from people who were in and around the coaching staff, and they heard negative epithets used in reference to me, gay slurs, if you like. But I wasn't there to hear them. It's not often that people will use those in front of a 6'9 black man, really, is it?
How about other players in the NBA now that your book is out? Any indication of the reaction?
Yes. Well, we've heard it. It's gone from the sublime to the ridiculous. But at the same time, I haven't had any emails from any of the players, no.
Philadelphia Sixers forward Shavlik Randolph said, "As long as you don't bring your gayness on me, I'm fine." There have been other comments in a similar vein. But then again, I read that you've received death threats.
No. That's absolutely not true, actually. In the past, when I talked about issues like gun control and the war, I definitely received death threats there. To this point, nope, nothing. Nothing like that. Many, many evil, horrible emails, but they haven't threatened my life as yet.
Right. Well, that's good.
But I have to say that the comments from players like that, whilst you have to understand that they aren't necessarily representative of the league as a whole, it does display part of the ignorance. I mean, as long as you don't bring your gay on me, what does that even mean? It's not often that I'm referred to like a communicable disease.
Well, let me play devil's advocate for just a second, and maybe he means it in a more benign way, that if you're playing basketball against me, that's fine, as long as you don't come on to me.
But it's absurd. You know what? That's absolutely absurd. The idea that because I'm gay, I just wouldn't be able to tell the difference between a romantic liaison and playing basketball against you. Not only is there immense narcissism and vanity there, unfounded probably, I don't know what the guy is or who he looks like, but you have to understand, the very premise of that is not only deeply insulting, but it's base. It feeds every evil stereotype there is out there about predatory gay men. It's absurd, and the very question should be struck.
You are very philanthropic. You run a basketball center for urban youth in England. You're on the boards of various organizations like Big Brothers Big Sisters and groups devoted to single-parent families, ending racism in sports, and the group Disability Sport England. You're pursuing a PhD in psychology, as we mentioned. Do you feel that in some way, being a first in this way, that you have to be beyond reproach, that you'll be held to additional scrutiny in the way that Jackie Robinson was?
I'm sure I will. I'm not perfect, and I'm perfectly flawed, but I do recognize that, and I'm not going to try and pretend that I'm not. I think that's probably the biggest protection that I have, is the fact that I don't pretend that I am, without flaw. I know that, you know, there are many things that I must work on personally, and I've got to be an example. A real role model is not great because he's perfect. He's great because of the intention of himself to be of use, to be a quality person with flaws.
You were a sort of informal foster parent to two teenagers while you played on the Magic in Florida, a state that bans gay people from adopting children. Is that one of the reasons you stayed in the closet?
No. No, there were other reasons that were more pressing than that. But it certainly is a concern. But it's a concern now when the number of children in need of fostering and adoption in this country and in others is piling up like snow on the side of the road, that people would quibble about whether gay people were appropriate as parents is absurd.
You waited until 3 years after your basketball career to come out in this book. What do you think would have happened if you had openly discussed being gay while you were playing in the NBA?
As I've already said, it's not the job of individual players to make the environment safe for them. It's the job of the employer. I don't think that – does anybody really imagine that playing on a team whose owner banned Brokeback Mountain, does anybody think I would be welcomed with open arms?
How does an owner of a sports team ban Brokeback Mountain?
Because he owns the cinemas.
Oh, he banned them from movie theaters that he owned?
Yes. So given that, would that suggest that that would be an open and welcoming and positive environment to be in?
Right. But what do you think would have, I'm not saying it's your responsibility to have created that environment, but if you had braved it, do you think you would have been banished from the league? Do you think there would have been, what do you think would have happened? What would happen today? Because there must be some other gay player out there.
There are lots of gay players out there, not just in the NBA, but in all sports. But that's not the point. The point is, again, as I've referenced, it is not the job of Vanguard to fall on their swords in order to make people open their minds. It's the job of people to open their minds so that these players can boldly step out.
There's currently a lawsuit pending against Penn State coach Renee Portland, I understand, who's accused of dismissing a player from her team because she thought the player was gay. Do you think change needs to come from the top?
Change needs to come from the entire society. But yes, that is, again, a workplace issue. Universities, institutions of learning, workplaces around the country are not places where bigotry should be tolerated.
We have a few minutes left with John Amici, former NBA player, who has just come out as a gay man in his new memoir, Man in the Middle. Off that topic, I did not know this about you. You once turned down a $17 million contract from the Lakers to sign for just $600,000 with Orlando. Is that correct?
That is true, yes.
Are you nuts?
No. I am a man of principle, however. The year before that offer was made by the Lakers, nobody, and I mean nobody, could I get interested in me. I begged, I called, I rang around. The only team that had any interest in me was Orlando. They cut three quality players, well-known quality players, on guaranteed contracts in order to keep me on their roster and give me my first start in basketball. I felt obliged to return that favor. And you don't behave in a principled fashion based on the idea that everybody else will be principled around you. If you did that, there would be no principled behavior whatsoever.
That particular principle is extremely rare, then, not only in professional sports, but in our society at large, no?
I would agree with that. But the part of me says it's important. And what I look at is there are many people who are asked what their word is worth. And when people ask me that, I can say, well, at least $17 million.
John Amici, NBA player. Now the author of a book revealing that he was gay the entire time that he played professional basketball. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.